thank you, Dr. Gaynor. Our next speaker is the executive director of Young America's Foundation in Reston, Virginia. He is a graduate of Swarthmore and of the Yale University Institute of Far Eastern Languages. He served in the U.S. Air Force in Vietnam, U.S. Air Force Intelligence of Vietnam during 1967-68. He is director of public relations for the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. Most of his work, however, has been with youth organizations. He has served on the board of the United States Youth Council and was vice president of the United States International Youth Year Commission. He is the editor of American Economic Texts, and his articles have appeared in the Lincoln Review, Academic Reviewer, and the Philadelphia Inquirer. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. James B. Taylor.
I'm afraid I'm not a doctor.
Everybody's a doctor. Everybody
is a doctor. I was, however, in my first job out of high school, I was compelled to join the American Newspaper Guild. So we've got four union people up here, and I want to protest formally the imbalance in this panel. It'll probably guarantee that we will be recognized by the National Education Association as suitable for listening or viewing. I'd like to discuss union involvement in U.S. international relations and the consequences of relying too heavily on American union leadership to carry the message of freedom around the world. What I would like to discuss are issues that I think are appropriate at a meeting of conservatives, as this one is, because conservatives have had in recent years a sort of love-hate relationship with unions. The common wisdom seems to be that, well, yes, the unions are socialists, they support extreme liberals like Walter Mondale, they insist on compulsory unionism, but they sure hate communists. And they do. And I think it's instructive that Mr. Brown is here and not William Wimpersinger. Many conservatives seem to believe that you can separate domestic activities of union officials from their activities abroad, and I would like to contend that they are inseparable. The fact that many highly placed conservatives believe union officials are solid on foreign policy has led to giving unions a major role in U.S. foreign policy. Under even the Reagan administration, the AFL-CIO has received millions of dollars for its international work of building free trade unions. Indeed, I can think of no other private organization in which our government has bestowed an almost semi-official status to engage in foreign policy. The money and authority that our government gives to the AFL-CIO leadership has enabled it to create an awesome international network with its own international agenda. I'd like to outline the character of that network as I see it and the problems that it poses for U.S. foreign policy, but more especially for the conservative movement. And first, to what extent is the AFL-CIO involved in our foreign policy? The AFL-CIO receives many millions of U.S. taxpayer dollars from the U.S. Agency for International Development, and this money is used to run the Federation's free trade union operations, the American Institute for Free Labor Development, which is active in Central and South America, the Asian American Free Labor Institute, and the African American Labor Center. The AID money comprises the bulk of the funding used for their overseas projects, which are aimed at creating and supporting trade unions that are pro-democratic, anti-communist, and, it is hoped, pro-American. On top of this, Congress in 1983 created the National Endowment for Democracy in response to President Reagan's call in 1982 to aggressively promote the principles of democracy to the world's people. Money enacted for NED was to be parceled out to organizations that would develop programs to spread democracy abroad. But of the first $18 million of taxpayers' money voted to fund NED, $11 million went to the AFL-CIO's Free Trade Union Institute. $1.7 million went to the Chamber of Commerce. $1.5 million went to the Republican Party for its own Freedom Institute, and $1.5 million went to the Democratic Party for its Free Institute. The deal here was that the AFL-CIO also got dibs on staff at the Democratic Party. The remaining $2.3 million went for offices and a staff headed by a prominent union backer and social democrat, Carl Gershman. The reason for this disproportion, according to the Wall Street Journal, is, quote, labor has the lion's share of programs to build democratic institutions in other countries, but you can see why. Articles supportive of NED were published by Evans and Novak and by Orrin Hatch, and also an article in the Washington Times, I believe. The problems with the NED go beyond imbalance in distributing its money. The labor people in charge at NED are very reticent about detail and how the money is used. Initially, there was no direct monitoring or required audit of the use of NED funds by Congress or any government agency. While NED was subject to audit, the groups using those funds, the Free Trade Union Institute, for example, was not. The new authorization for NED gives USIA audit rights, rights that the NED vigorously resisted. But it remains to be seen whether USIA will use its authority to audit. From what I understand, the National Security Council has told Charles Wick to lay off NED. NED was also exempt from the open records law. It was not subject to freedom of information as other agencies are. Under the new authorization, it is subject to freedom of information, another change that was fought by the staff. There's also a discrepancy in proposals for funding that constituent groups submit to NED. The proposals of the Chamber of Commerce and the two parties are very detailed in itemizing what the money will be used for. The FTUI proposals are quite vague, making it almost impossible to determine how the money will be used. Unaccountability of this kind can lead to abuse. The Free Trade Union Institute gave $20,000 in May 1984 to its unions in Panama to support the union candidate for president in an election in which the U.S. was supposed to be neutral. This is one example of union officials having their own international agenda. It's important to remember that in giving money to the AFL-CIO, we are giving to not just a private American organization, but to an organization that believes it is part of an international movement whose principles and interests often transcend national ones. I was on a trip to Europe in 1980 with a group of 10 young Republican leaders and 10 young Democratic leaders, and one of the delegates was Jerry Payne, the head of the Committee on Political Education in Indiana. And Jerry and I saw eye to eye on just about every national defense or foreign policy issue, including the fact that the world would be better off without the existence of the French. But in talking with Jerry Payne, I made mention of the fact that union popularity in America was declining, membership was going down, they were losing more and more representation elections. And he told me, well, yeah, that's true, but in about 10, 20, or 30 years, that will all turn around because of the NEA. And he explained that the AFL-CIO depended on the NEA to bring up the next generation of American young people to be pro-union. And I said, you know, how can you say this? You and I believe exactly alike on foreign policy, and you know how bad the NEA is. He says, yeah, I know they're bad, and I don't like it, but we have to depend on these people to bring labor back. So one of the questions for me is, should our government or should conservatives have confidence in the AFL-CIO to promote democracy or American principles abroad, especially in light of the positions taken by the Federation in recent years on a variety of issues, including the military issues that Jeff Gaynor has talked about, the foreign policy stands they have taken. Some people like Max Green, writing in the Fall 84 Policy Review, believe that the AFL-CIO, in adopting such positions, is trying to shore up its relations with the ideological left. Indeed, in taking part in the 1983 March on Washington, it was marching with people who...